Hello, and welcome to Season 3 of Medical Women Talking. I'm Jane Dacre, and in this season, I wanted to speak to more wonderful and inspiring medical women, including people who are early and mid-career. These women are all making a name for themselves in their respective fields. They're what I like to call rising stars and will be influencing all our futures.
Today, I'm talking to Dr. Becky Cox. Becky's a GP and she's one of the founders of something called Surviving in Scrubs. So you'll hear about that a little bit later in the podcast. So Becky, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me today and great to be invited on.
So Becky, tell me about your career. When did you first decide to become a doctor?
Oh, goodness. That's a good question. So I was always really interested in science at school. I remember, I think around age 7, telling my nan I was going to be a scientist. Then thinking I was going to be a vet. And then goodness knows what else, a lawyer at one point. And I think when I was about 14, 15, I was doing quite well in my exams at school. And my biology teacher said, "Have you thought about medicine?" And I hadn't really. My family were all... no one had been to university, no one had been to college actually properly. And so it was all a bit of an unknown. And it was something that we all had a lot of discussion about. And eventually my parents agreed, despite being terrified of the student loans. And I ended up applying. But yeah, if it wasn't for the biology teacher, I don't think we would have had that conversation.
So. Oh, fantastic. So you got in, obviously. Which medical school did you go to?
So I went to Cardiff Medical School. I obviously applied to 4. I only got into Cardiff, which I'm glad. Still, Cardiff was a great choice, an absolutely great choice. I'm so glad that I went there.
Fantastic. And so how did you settle in? Because sometimes people who come from backgrounds that haven't had a history of going to university struggle a bit in medical schools. I know that from when I used to be the director of UCL Medical School in London.
Yeah, absolutely. It was it felt very strange to be there. It was, you know, I was definitely a bit scared of being there at first. My parents were really worried because they worried, you know, absolutely terrified of the financial cost and worried about, you know, me living away and what that would be and why on earth wasn't I just going and working in a normal office job or something like that. It was a big culture shock, actually, going from somewhere where, you know, my school, which is just a normal state school, going to somewhere where there's a lot of people who've been to private schools. And, you know, I remember just thinking, everybody around me, oh my God, all their parents are really impressive. Their parents have got all these professional jobs. I don't feel like I fit in here. It was a really big culture shock. And I think my reaction to that was, well, I'm going to do better than everyone else at my exams and I'm going to work my arse off.
So you worked hard?
I did. I worked really hard and I ended up, I mean, everybody was like, oh, you're going, you know, when you get to medical school, you realise how average you are and how, you know, how it's quite normal to be in the bottom few percentiles when you get to med school, having been in the top when you're at school. And I'm having none of that. So I lived at the library and then graduated with an honours.
Oh, good for you. Fantastic. And so then when did you decide you wanted to be a GP?
Oh God. I mean, so many of us nowadays probably don't go straight into the specialty that they think they're going to and have a bit of a convoluted journey. My plan was to be a surgeon. So I did my foundation years in Wales and did a surgical focus on those and then decided to go for academic run through training. Not satisfied just with going for general core surgical training, but run through. So I ended up applying for urology run through because I did a really great urology job when I was an F1 and got a place in Oxford to do that. So I moved across to Oxford, started my urology training, and after not very long, less than a year, decided that actually it wasn't for me and that I needed to change. So I changed to general practice and did academic GP training
instead. So what was it about urology that wasn't for you?
So it sort of leads on to why we started Surviving in Scrubs. But basically, I really struggled with the culture within surgery, and unfortunately had experienced sexual harassment and sexual assault. And it got to a point where I was working in urology, and we were also doing rotations in general surgery, and I just found the culture and the environment just wasn't, it was too hostile, and I decided for my own well-being that I needed to change at that point.
Really? So I mean, I don't want you to breach any confidences or to feel triggered, but what sort of thing caused the problems that you felt?
Some of the stuff happened towards the end of medical school. Some was during my foundation years as well in Wales. And I experienced sexual assault from a very senior doctor. I was in a really difficult relationship at the time with another doctor as well. And then I started my surgical training, moving to Oxford, hoping for a fresh start, and was hit by the same things again, and found that the same culture, the same sort of misogynistic comments, the ways that women were talked about, both in the workplace, but also women as patients. And I really, really struggled with it. And actually at that point was diagnosed with PTSD. And really? That meant that if it was officially diagnosed, I was struggling. I quit surgical training and then ended up being diagnosed after that.
And what kind of comments? I mean, I'm sure that people listening to the podcast will have heard the now infamous consultant anaesthetist from Wales who talked about women just being essentially snowflakes. Mm. What sort of comments were they that made you feel so upset at the time?
Oh, it was all sorts of different things. It was the way that you would hear both juniors and seniors talking about female consultant surgeons, calling them sort of witches, spiders, like those really negative things, and worse swear words that I won't repeat. And then it was also, being overly sexualized, comments about your body. I mean, I had an experience where they've ranked all the F1's bottoms. In my job, and I won. Great, brilliant, great. But they used to get together in the mess and talk about it, and so it was things like that. Like you could laugh it off as banter, which I do not agree with. But it was stuff like that. Like it was just incessant. It was constant, and it sort of chips away at your self-worth and your value. And along with that, it was things like people joking about rape or sexual assault, and joking about female patients' bodies. I remember being in theatre at one point and during an operation, and this patient had bruises on the inside of her legs, and the consultant and male registrar were both joking about, oh, I wonder how she got those bruises, ha ha ha. And actually, I stood there thinking, well, actually, is this a safeguarding concern? And we should not be laughing about this. So it was that kind of stuff that was going on.
So you set up Surviving in Scrubs with your colleague, Chelsea Jewett, who we're also talking to in the podcast. Mm. Presumably, when you moved to primary care, things were better, or were they?
I think things were different. Is the way to phrase it. So I think in primary care there's less of this open culture of misogyny. You don't hear it quite so much, but I think there certainly were still elements of sexism going on. Things like asking too many questions about your partner, asking when you're going to have a baby, comments being made about other female GPs in the practice going, oh god, she's off on maternity leave again, she's going to have another baby. And, it's those kind of things, like really negative comments that are focused on your reproduction rather than your skill as a GP or what you're bringing to the practice. And I was even in an interview, I was asked, are you having kids? Are you going to have kids? And you think
that's not allowed.
It's not allowed. It's not allowed. But they asked it anyway. And they did it with a caveat of, we're not meant to ask this, but yeah. You just think, oh, my God. This is wrong. Why are you still doing it? There was an awful lot of that still going on. And I think there's an awful lot about female patients as well that still goes on.
So is there anything from your Surviving in Scrubs, you've been collecting stories. Is there anything that stands out that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in the story. So we've got more than 200 now on our website, and they're from all across healthcare, so from any profession who works in healthcare. And there's so many different things in it. There's a lot about, you know, power dynamics and about juniors being targeted and repeat offenders and all of that sort of stuff. One of the things that really struck me about it is quite a few of the stories talk about patient care being used as an excuse to perpetrate these behaviours, or training being used. So there are, you know, stories that we've had where somebody during an operation, somebody's been scrubbed in and they've been sexually assaulted by a colleague who was also operating, or they've been sexually assaulted by somebody who was, you know, the anaesthetist at the time, who wasn't scrubbed in, but your hands are scrubbed, you can't defend yourself, and they know, and they use it as an opportunity, which, you know, directly affects patient care. And so many of the stories that have come to us talk about this sense of dismissal, not only when they're trying to raise the concern, but also during, you know, making a referral, giving out, you know, requests for how a patient should be cared for, the management plan being dismissed. And that comes from, you know, junior male staff dismissing that, but also seniors as well. And you just think, well, if you can't even function and do your clinical job properly without being dismissed or questioned or interrogated, that is directly affecting patient care, but it also massively affects your sense of self-worth. And we see that again and again and again. And that's something that's got to be looked at.
Right. So are you still working in primary care? You're still being a GP as well as doing the surviving in scrubs?
Yeah. Still juggling.
So must full time?
Not full time. So I have a bit of a funny job, a very portfolio GP. So I've specialised in women's health. So I worked in community gynaecology for 2.5 years after finishing training. And then I've gone across now and I work in a tertiary gynaecology centre in Oxford. So I work in pelvic pain. So I do that 2 days a week. And then the rest of the time it's surviving scrubs, but I also work at a homelessness surgery in the centre of Oxford as well.
And so how do you think your career is going to pan out? You're still at the fairly early stages and embracing a portfolio career, which is something that so many women aspire to. How do you think this is all going to work out?
I have got no idea, because I think if you asked me 3 years ago when I finished training, what would I have been doing? I wouldn't have said this at the time. I wouldn't have, you know, would not have guessed that we'd be running a national campaign, or that, you know, I'd be working in you know, two very specialist areas of medicine. So I think, I mean, in terms of career, I'm just keeping my mind open at the moment. I think what drives me is wanting to see change. And that change for me has always been a focus on violence against women and vulnerable women. So, you know, I don't think our campaign's going to go anywhere anytime soon. We're probably still going to be doing this in 10 years' time, but I hope by then that we'll have gone international with it, and that we'll be seeing the changes that we're recommending being implemented. But in terms of my clinical career, I certainly want to keep working in women's health, and I really, really want to drive the work going forwards for vulnerable women, for women who experience trauma, for women with addictions, women who are facing poverty, and thinking about how we should be better caring for them within the NHS.
It's fantastic to hear negative experiences being turned into such a positive passion, actually. So that's very impressive. And the campaign's been going very well, hasn't it? Do you want to outline some of the successes that you've had?
Yeah, I mean, we've only been going just under 18 months, so it's not been long at all. It's been a whirlwind. So some of the big thing, I mean, the big thing was getting our website launched, because we never done a website before. Doctors, we'd not been trained in how to do a website, how to run a campaign, absolutely no idea how to do any of that. So probably one of the biggest achievements is learning that as a start, and learning that you can go from being a doctor to doing some activism work and not losing your job. But I think some of the big things are that we've seen sexism, sexual harassment, sexual assault being added into good medical practice under the GMC. We've seen that NHS England have, you know, taken action. They've launched a programme of work on this with their charter. We have, you know, we've been able to start working with the medical royal colleges, and that's across healthcare as well. So working with the ambulance service and the Royal College of Nursing as well. And those are doors that we, you know, struggled to get through at times, but it's been a huge success being able to get through them and to start working with those organisations. But one of the biggest things that's happened very recently is that we've published our first report. And that was, you know, a lot of late nights, a lot of long hours, a lot of, you know, really figuring out what on earth we were doing. But we got that published 3 weeks ago. And that report is an analysis of 150 of the stories on our website, looking at, you know, quality themes that come up through those stories, but also looking at the numbers and getting that published, getting that out, getting such a positive media response and a positive response from healthcare organisations has been great. And we had, yeah, a bit of a pinch me moment just over a week ago, actually. So we went and we dropped off our report at Downing Street, which was bizarre, but also amazing at the same time.
So did they let you in? Do you just drop it off at the door?
Or? We just dropped it off at the door. We weren't allowed in, but we dropped it off. And that was just, yeah, just a very surreal moment.
Fantastic. So, I mean, essentially your career has taken off exponentially, but not in the direction that perhaps you might have predicted. There are several young women listening to this podcast who perhaps would like to join to help you or would like to have their own campaign about something they feel strongly about. What advice would you give to people who are aspiring to do something different, do something big like you've done?
I guess just go for it. Just be brave and do it. Don't think about it too much. And if you think, oh, I don't know how to do a website, I don't know how to do X, Y, Z, you can learn. You know, we're lucky now that there's so many resources online, and you know, you can always somehow, you always find somebody who knows as well. So just asking for help. But I think the main thing is just go for it, just do it. And if it's something you're passionate about, it will drive and it will be successful because you're passionate about it. And, you know, we've at times obviously all suffered with anxiety, worrying, is this going to work? What going to happen? You know, are the GMC going to come after us or God knows what? But you just do it and just give it a shot and you'll probably find that it works. And one of the things, we've got little badges that we give out. And one of them just says, just like, bloody difficult doctor. Just if you're a doctor and you want to do a campaign, just be bloody difficult and go for it and do it.
Fantastic here. So there's just one thing before I finish off, which is sometimes having these big campaigns and these passions and what have you, impacts a bit on women's personal lives. So how about your family, the people that you care about, the people close to you, how have they reacted to all of this?
So overwhelmingly positive, but they're also, just say, they are very, very supportive. And without that support, you can't do it. Having that backup for, you know, if you're a bit overwhelmed with things is really, really important. And certainly, yeah, you do get the comments, like certainly my partner or my parents at times have said, you know, how are you fitting all this in? Are you at risk of burning out? And, you know, we've learned, you know, haven't burnt out, but learned, you know, at times when things have felt too much, you have to take a bit of a back step. You think about how you're arranging your diary and ensure that you're looking after yourself. But we're very lucky with me and Chelsea. There are two of us doing this, and that helps because we are, you know, we're a team of two, but we also have volunteers who help us. And together we do, you know, we know if the other one's struggling, the other one picks up a bit of slack for a while, and then we, you know, rejig that balance, and we get through it together. And we're just really, really lucky to have that really close relationship. We speak to each other every day. And we look after each other.
Thank you very much. So Becky Cox, co-founder of Surviving in Scrubs, fantastic to talk to you today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Medical Women Talking with me, Jane Dacre. If you wish to hear more conversations with medical women, then check out the other seasons of this podcast series. And thank you for listening.